listening, of course, to the closing market report on this 30th day of April. It's the last trading day of the month. On the phone line to discuss it, and the first trading day of May, which starts this evening, is Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, there will be some changes when trade opens tonight. For instance, all the limits have been updated.
Well, that's absolutely the truth, and that does start with tonight's session because the night session is the first session of the next day. So we'll see corn limits now be 35 instead of 40, beans a dollar instead of 70, Chicago wheat 35 instead of 60, and KC wheat 45 instead of 60. So we also, there are no limits now on the grain or the oilseed options. They've removed those, and it's kind of understandable that they did that just because of the fact that if we do have a limit up day, people can still spread themselves off using options.
We'll explain how that happens. What does that mean exactly?
What does that mean?
Yes.
Oh, well, that would mean that, you know, if we reach a limit level in the futures, you could go in and you could buy yourself an option to, in other words, let's say that you're short and there's no way that you can, you know, that you can sell anymore. You know, you're long and you can't sell, okay,
right.
and we're limit down and you can't sell. You can actually go in and buy an option, a long put, and, you know, then you've limited your loss right there, because if you buy a long put right where the futures are trading, the only difference would be, of course, what the premium is you would pay for it, and that could be very high, and yet, let's say in beans, at a dollar a limit, and let's say it looks like it's going to go down for a couple of days, that would be a great thing to do. It used to be that we had limits on options, so, you know, then that dried up too, and you'd have to keep buying further and further away from the money. Now they have no limit on options, so people should be able to get at the money if that's what they want. They'll just have to pay for it.
Now, you would have to buy that during the trading session.
Right.
You can't. Can you see the synthetic during the trading session? I'm just not really aware.
You can figure out the synthetic to a point. You know, the big thing, okay, let's say that we're down a limit, Todd, and we're down at $13 in July beans.
Sure.
And I went in and I bought a $13 put, and it cost me $3 to do it, okay? Well, I either paid the $3 to do that and protect myself from some more limit down days, because what that does is gives me the right to actually turn that put into a
sale,
a short futures, into a sell, yes.
Right.
Which you can't do physically once we reach limit in the futures, because
yeah,
it stops trading. So it does give you that safety valve, is what it does, so that you can limit your losses. You know, it's just like, you know, that's one thing I think that producers are confused about at times, or even end users. If you sell the futures, you know, you can buy a call, and you have fixed how much you're going to give back if the market goes higher. It's your commission premium cost. And so you can actually limit the loss on that short futures position, or vice versa, on a long futures position, you can buy a put and limit the loss if the market goes down just by what you've paid for the premium and commission costs. And so there are ways to be able to manage risk, and that's what they're talking about with this.
So the CME Group has changed some of the rules, and there's just new ways to take advantage of those and look for opportunities, because you can gripe about it if you want, but the risk
is
risk.
Not going to change it.
Yeah, but that's not going to change it, is it, if you gripe about it? So
nope.
Risk is the risk. Hey, let's talk about a couple of other things. Speaking of risk, the yuan at an 18-month low in China.
Yes. Yeah, that was concerning today, you know, when you look at the, you know, the potential for what the export impact could be, and even the energy impact when you look at the, you know, you look at energies, you were just talking about them before, we're below 100 now. I think that that is a concerning thing. Another concerning thing, of course, is China's very angry over the sanctions the U.S. has against 8 businesses over there because the owner was supposedly selling missile parts to Iran. So I think that this 18-month low really leads right into what we've been seeing on the export market. When you saw last Thursday, again, China and unknown cancellations, both in corn and beans. Last week, China canceled 54,000 metric tons on corn. Unknown canceled 215,800. And we know that unknown does a lot of buying for China. And on beans, China canceled 55,000. So, you know, this kind of makes sense now. Because, you know, just like when our dollar goes down, our ability to buy other products is diluted. You know, it costs us more, basically, is what it does. And so it is concerning in itself. And some of these cancellations could be due to the fact that they might have hedged themselves against delivery issues. you know, one of the things the U.S. got pretty smart about, their freights included when they sell corn or beans to China or any other place. Brazil doesn't do that. And so that's why they've been able to just cancel the way they have down in Brazil. So it is worrisome. Let's just put it that way. But, you know, we've seen a lot of other things happen over there, too, and they seem to still continue to buy.
Well, let's continue to drop around the world a bit. We'll stay closer to where you are there at home in China, meaning on that hemisphere. Talk a little bit about Ukraine, because they've got problems, and we wonder whether they'll get corn planted. They have some financial problems, too.
Oh, they do. They're, you know, the fact that their currency has dropped so much in value, you know, it certainly leads to speculation that they'll use poorer seed and maybe a less population, certainly less fertilizer. And in fact, I had an opportunity to talk with a fellow who was just over there and got back on Good Friday, and he said they didn't see any fertilizer on the fields that they normally would see when they go at this time of year. And today when they announced, you know, that the police and the security people say, you know, we're helpless when it comes to being able to defend this situation. You know, he made a comment. He said it's really difficult over there because a lot of the attitude of the people is, well, I speak Russian anyway. You know, so it doesn't show a whole lot of gumption to want to fight for anything. But the bigger implications, I think, coming out of Ukraine, and that's something that we don't talk about much, is wheat. I mean, they are a gigantic wheat exporter to other parts of the country, you know, or other parts of the world, and the impact that it might have on wheat also is in the background. So, you know, that Ukraine situation just doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon.
So that covers wheat, and then let's move to the southern hemisphere and the western side of the world, Brazil, Argentina. Maybe we ought to talk about safrina crops there, second crop, both for corn and soybeans. They're having an impact, too.
Wow, they certainly are. I mean, the Brazilian safrina corn crop couldn't have had better weather than what it's got. So it's just really in awesome shape. It looks like they'll probably be up 2 million metric tons. Today, Oil World came out, said they're going to raise Brazilian bean crops due to safrina beans by about 2%, which pushes us up, you know, toward that 2 million metric ton increase. Argentina raised their bean number by 2%. You know, it just says that I think it follows through, Todd. You know, we hear so much talk about El Nino right now. And the fact that at the beginning of the growing season, there's always lots and lots of problems, and then it seems like it settles out. And that's kind of the way it's gone down in Brazil. They had a lot of issues, and now all of a sudden they have just almost ideal growing circumstances. And so, you know, it's we've built a lot of money into this market with the idea that we're going to have lots of problems due to El Nino. And that could be true, but more so on the wheat side because of the impact it has in Australia. And so it's going to be interesting as this whole thing plays out.
I want to skip to one last little thing, and it's not so little. That's the USDA feed and residual numbers. We'll get another set with WASD, and there's, still some jiggling in the marketplace as to what that number really is.
Well, you know, you hear a lot of complaints. We've heard it, you know, when we've talked on Commodity Week, you know, that number is too high. You know, why is it so big? You know, the question, I actually went to Jerry Norton at the World Board, and I asked him, would you please explain to me what this really says and why is it the way it is? And he said, if you look at feed residual, it's really production minus food use, exports, and carryout. And in other words, it's the miscellaneous category, so it takes everything in. But he also said, you know, that feed use usually is, most people rule of thumb, about $4 billion a year. Okay, so in large crop years, residual can grow up to $1.3 billion usually. In small crop years, it maybe is about $300 million. And so, you know, we've had a large crop year. We're at $5.3 billion. And at the very beginning of the year, when this large number comes out, they really don't know how many bins have been built. They don't know how much is on the ground. They don't know how much out-of-condition corn has been carried forward. And that's a big question. You know, we've got out-of-condition corn here this year too, Todd, and you know, that hopefully will get used up during the year. So by the time we get to the fourth quarter, and that's why that September grain stocks report is so important, it'll help us get a better handle on what the true residual is. But at the beginning of the year, we always have this same issue. And that's why if you look back when we had 10.7 for production, we had a very low residual number. And so, you know, everybody was saying then, well, it's too small. It's too small, you know, because we have all these cattle eating at that point in time. Well, that's just a reflection of kind of a rule of thumb that they use for the residual at the beginning and depending upon whether it's a big crop or a small crop. So to me, it really helped me understand better what it's all about.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Jackie Vakes with Stuart Peterson.